Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Rains, and today we're going to be talking about how Amazon Prime and Disney stack up against Netflix. Today I want to take a look at how two of the most well-known companies in the world are fighting for their streaming TV supremacy at the moment, which also happens to include sports, which some of their other competing services lack. And with this in mind, Amazon is expected to report its Q2 earnings results this Thursday, July 25th, and Disney is set to roll out its report on its Q3 metrics on August 6th. And then I also kind of want to start the show, and we're going to do actually a decent amount of it at the beginning, on Netflix's recent results, which saw its stock tumble, because this helps paint a larger picture of the industry, since Amazon's the industry leader at the moment. And just if we can't really talk about Disney and Amazon and what they're planning on doing if we don't address Netflix, since they're the biggest player at the moment. But before we do that, I want to say, remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com. Also, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. So as I mentioned, we're going to do a quick Q2 overview of Netflix and then dive into a little bit more of the details, as some of you might have seen last week, that led to Netflix stock tanking. So Netflix posted adjusted Q2 earnings of 60 cents per share, which topped our Zacks consensus estimates last Wednesday, but this marked a significant fall from the year ago period's 85 cents per share. On top of that, Netflix fell just slightly short of Wall Street estimates on the top line, and it came in at $4.92 billion. Its sales were up 26% year over year, and this topped Q1's 22% top line expansion. In second quarter, revenue came on it on top of 40% growth in the year ago period, but this is going to slowly mark maybe a new normal for Netflix as its top line revenue kind of slows down compared to where it's been over the last several years. But really, the big reason why Netflix stock was in the news last week is because it fell well short of its own subscriber estimates. Netflix added 2.7 million paid memberships during the second quarter, which came in well below its own 5 million forecast and Wall Street's 5.5 million estimate. And even more shocking, the California-based company noted that it had roughly 130,000 fewer subscribers in the U.S. in Q2 than it did at the end of the first quarter. So it was its first quarter-over-quarter subscriber decline in the U.S. since 2011. In This might not spell bad news for Netflix, but it certainly wasn't a good sign, especially as it faces all of this soon-to-be competition later this year and early in 2020. So, as I mentioned, Netflix has done this before. This is obviously not the first time Netflix has ever missed its subscriber numbers. It added 5.5 million users in Q2 2018 when it projected it would bring in 6.1 million users at the time, so it fell short there. And Netflix also fell short by roughly a million users in Q1 of 2017 and Q2 of 2016. So Q2 has been historically not the best time for its subscriber growth, so this could just be a little bit of a hiccup overall. And this is also coming after Netflix beat subscriber growth projections for three straight periods by some impressive amounts. The company blamed its subscriber miss on its content schedule, and looking ahead, it expects to add 7 million paid users during the third quarter, which would bring its global subscriber growth to 158.6 million total. So still some massive growth, and we'll get into how that stacks up against some of these other companies soon. Overall, though, Netflix stock is down 15% since they released their earnings on July 17th, and it opened at $366 a share that morning of July 17th, and it closed Monday night at $310 per share. And overall, Netflix is down around 15% over the last 12 months, which is not the greatest sign for the company, but still overall over the last 3 years, they're on a tear. They're up significantly. They're higher than Amazon. They're obviously higher than Disney at that point. They're up 163% over the last 3 years, where Amazon's up just 158%. So they're up 265%. Sorry for these number jumble right here. Netflix is up 260%. Amazon's up 168% over that period. So that's just to give people a sense that Netflix has slowed down over the last year, but they're still on a massive upward trend over the last 3 years. Now we're going to do a little bit of an industry overview and talk about some of Netflix's recent worries before we jump into what Amazon and Disney plan to do. So Netflix is currently the largest streaming platform in the world. It boasts just over 60 million U.S. users and 91.5 million international subscribers. That was up roughly 22% in the second quarter. And as I mentioned, the company expects to add 7 more million. That would bring its total to nearly 160 million worldwide. It would also mark a similar 22% climb compared to the second quarter. But now I want to talk a little bit more about where this is going to come. The firm expects to add just 800,000 users in the U.S. and 6.2 million internationally. The U.S. market is its most saturated market at the moment, and it's going to continue to go that way. So anyone that's a Netflix investor or a potential Netflix investor really needs to be paying attention to its international growth and how it can compete in this much more crowded streaming market here in the U.S. It is worth noting, as I mentioned, they have missed subscriber estimates before, and they obviously they're going to paint a rosy picture of their outlook, but they said that anytime they've over-forecasted in the past, it hasn't really impacted their long-term year-over-year growth metrics in terms of users. So they reiterated that. And then Netflix investor or Netflix executives also mentioned that they still only capture what they are calling 10% of their customers' television time and even less mobile screen time in the U.S. specifically. So that they're saying is a great sign for them, as this streaming TV age is really still in its infancy, even though Netflix is such a big company at the moment. But now I want to talk about what might be worrisome for Netflix and why Amazon and Disney and some of these other players might be able to gain market share quicker than some might expect, since Netflix had such a big head start and has such a massive user base so far. As some people might have heard over the last month and a half or so, Netflix has lost two of its most watched TV shows here in the U.S. It lost The Office and Friends, and both of those are headed to rival platforms within the next few years. HBO Max is where Friends is going to head, and The Office is going to be part of NBC Universal's streaming TV offering that's going to roll out in 2020. So The Office is currently Netflix's number one show, according to Nielsen data. This is from 2018. Netflix executives don't really like to talk about anything that's not their programming. They've obviously addressed some of these issues before. But overall, library programming, this is according to Nielsen, which includes TV reruns and licensed from other studios, accounted for 72% of total viewing minutes in 2018 in the U.S. And obviously Netflix has been preparing for people like Disney and NBC and all these other companies pulling their content to start their own streaming platforms. That's why they've been spending billions of dollars on their original TV shows. But it is shocking that reruns of old TV shows do account for such a massive chunk of the viewing minutes, which is really a big metric that is key for all of these companies in the streaming space. So it's going to be hard maybe for Netflix to recreate that rerun. I'm watching 15 episodes of Office in a 2 day span just because it's easy to watch, where their shows have been great, but I don't want to get too into the weeds on that. It's going to be hard for them to create that rerun watchability factor, especially at the moment. But as I mentioned, they've been spending billions of dollars on their own original TV content, movies, TV shows, which is really impacting their debt levels. Their free cash flow actually is expected to be negative $3.5 billion in fiscal 2019 with a slight improvement in 2020. And then in the meantime, and this is from their latest release, the company said, our plan is to use high yield debt to fund our content investments as we did in April. So they're taking on more debt to fund their content strategy, which they see is really the only way they can grow their user base is to have more and more shows. So it'll be interesting to watch what Netflix does going forward. And now we're going to get into what their competitors are doing. So Netflix standard plan currently costs $12.99 per month, with its four screen premium offering running just under $16 at $15.99. At the moment, Amazon Prime costs $12.99 a month, so that same as that base Netflix price point. And Jeff Bezos and Amazon are a little, they don't like to give that many details about things they don't feel are necessary, so they've been very vague with Prime figures for the longest time. But they have said that Prime has over 100 million users, which is obviously a very vague number, but that puts it into perspective compared to where Netflix is at the moment. And what's interesting, I've read multiple reports on this. It's not even clear exactly how many people are watching Prime Video when they have a Prime subscription. So a lot of the people who have Prime memberships are using it for the shipping deals and the different discounts on Amazon's retail website, which Prime Video is included in. So it's interesting to see that at the moment, it seems like a lot of people, and I've even done some random polls in our office, and people who have Prime memberships don't even necessarily watch Prime Video, as I said. So that could be a good thing. My producer, Danny, just raised his hand and said he never watches Prime video offerings, even though he has a Prime account. So that could be a good thing or a bad thing. I would say it's a good thing at the moment because they can only go up, and when you're going to have a more competitive space, people who are already using Prime just for the retail benefits, when they find out, hey, maybe I could just use this to replace my Netflix. Overall, why wouldn't you just dump Netflix if Netflix has less and less stuff? Who knows if that's going to be the case, but it's going to be a much more crowded market. So that could give them a leg up. And then meanwhile, Hulu's ad-free version currently costs $11.99 per month. And we should remember that Hulu is now controlled by Disney. And Hulu last reported that it had roughly 28 million paid users. So on a much smaller end compared to Netflix and Amazon Prime. And now we're going to look at what is coming in the next several months, which I'm actually very looking forward to, just to see how these services look and what is actually on there in the first days of these services. So we have Disney Plus will debut in November for $6.99 per month. And then Apple is set to launch its standalone streaming service this fall as well, which is called the very original Apple TV Plus. So a lot of pluses out there. And then we have NBC Universal and then HBO Max also rolling out in early 2020. Apple TV Plus is going to feature some big name actors, some big name directors from Hollywood as well. And HBO has been, as many people know, sort of the standard for that premium TV model. They almost invented it in the early 2000s. And then Amazon and Disney are also going to have something that none of these other services at the moment say they want or have claimed they're going to try to get into, and that is a live streaming sports aspect. So we're going to start with Amazon, and we'll close with Disney. So Amazon Prime has had some pretty successful original TV shows, and Jeff Bezos, as he does with many things, he wants the company to compete and stand out and land big Hollywood projects. So going forward, it wouldn't be hard for me to believe that they're going to compete for some of these bigger budget films, maybe even as well. And then they also have some big names. Julia Roberts, some other actors have been on Prime original shows. And then I want to quickly look at the Emmy nomination lists over the last several years, because this isn't an exact proxy for success, but HBO has been the leader in Emmy nominations for a very long period of time. Netflix dethroned them briefly last year, but HBO is back on top again. So it's not necessarily exactly if you have the most Emmy nominations list, you're going to be the service that stands out, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So HBO in 2019 led all networks with 137 Emmy nominations. Netflix was in second place with 117. NBC came in third with 58. And then Amazon Prime Video was in fourth place with 47, which was a huge jump from last year when they were also when they had just 22 Emmy nominations. So that's interesting to see for Prime Video that it's now inching up that Emmy nominations list. They also had one of their standout shows came in second only to Game of Thrones in terms of overall Emmy nominations, and that was The Marvelous Miss Maisel with 20 Emmy nominations this year, which was also in front of HBO's Chernobyl and Saturday Night Live. So that gives people a perspective of how some of these small, successful properties can go a long way. I mean, people signed up for HBO just to have Game of Thrones. So these things do matter. And then overall, Amazon, as I said, is trying to push out more and more of this real noteworthy original content. They've reportedly paid $250 million to make what they hope could be the next big sci-fi kind of fantasy show in the wake of Game of Thrones leaving the airwaves for the first time in almost a decade, and that is the Lord of the Rings series that's been now teased for the last couple years. Over the last several days, they've said they've casted some of the characters, but they've spent a lot of money on this, and we'll see if this rolls out in the next several years. But that's definitely a show that they've been slowly hyping and that they are placing a lot of faith on. But now I want to get to what they're also doing, which HBO and Netflix are not doing. They're offering people the ability to watch live sports. They currently have U.S. rights for Thursday Night Football, which is the NFL, which is still king of sports in America, no matter what anyone else really says. They've agreed to pay about $65 million per season. So this will run through this upcoming season. So over the last 3 years, they'll have had Thursday Night Football for 2017, 2018, and then 2019. And they got those rights in 2017 after Twitter had the co-Thursday Night Football rights, and that kind of flamed out that it didn't seem many people were really watching Thursday Night Football on Twitter. As I mentioned, they have the rights along with Fox. So long term, Amazon is going to have to spend money to have its own infrastructure, I would assume. But then on top of its Thursday Night Football, they also have a lot of original sports-based documentary shows. Some series have been successful. Their All or Nothing programming kind of follows different sports teams, including NFL teams, soccer teams. They even did one on the New Zealand rugby team, so some international appeal there. And then in terms of international appeal, in what is a relatively shocking development over the last year or so, they paid what's going to be between $23 million, £30 million per match to stream 20 soccer games in the Premier League in the UK. This is going to start this upcoming season, and they're going to have the exclusive rights to these games in the UK. The Premier League is the biggest sports league in the world, so that's kind of a crazy thing that's kind of flown under the radar since it's not here in the US, but to get the Premier League rights in the UK, which is the home of the Premier League, for their holiday slate of games is really impressive. It'd be kind of like a UK broadcaster coming in, or a UK e-commerce company, which is what Amazon is, coming in and buying NFL rights for Thanksgiving or NBA Christmas Day rights. So that's a really interesting development to watch. They're also own Twitch, which is a streaming video game platform that they've kind of experimented with the NBA's developmental league in different aspects of Thursday Night Football as well. So Amazon is definitely thinking about the long game. They see their spending on live sports right as kind of a lost leader into their massive streaming future that can include original TV, movies, and streaming sports, which, as I mentioned, now a couple times, HBO and Netflix have no plans to do. So as the market becomes more and more crowded with all of these different streaming offerings, people might be more drawn to Amazon Prime since you're getting a lot more bang for your buck, especially with all these shipping deals and Prime deals that people are already paying for. And they might not even know, as we've said, that they have access to these video offerings for free. So now we're going to transition into Disney, which is set to roll out, as I said, Disney Plus in November. And this is going to feature what are arguably the biggest properties in entertainment. That's Disney, Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel, National Geographic. Marvel movies have dominated the box office for the last decade. Avengers Endgame just beat Avatar's record, even though you'll see that for inflation-adjusted numbers, none of those movies are really even up there just yet. But in terms of raw dollars, Avengers and all of these Marvel movies have just destroyed it at the box office over the last several years. So Disney buying Marvel was a great, ended up being a great purchase. It looks like Star Wars will likely be that as well. And then we should remember that Disney paid upwards of $71 billion to buy some key Fox assets, which they expect to help bolster what they see as a big future at the box office and maybe an even bigger future in the streaming world. So they're going to roll out a lot of different stuff that's going to be exclusive only to Disney Plus. And then starting with Captain Marvel, which came out this spring, all of their theatrical releases from 2019 and beyond are going to be then available exclusively on Disney Plus. So there's not going to be any other streaming services where you can watch any of these different Disney properties. That's from Pixar to Marvel to Star Wars. So that's a big selling point, seeing is that all these movies kill it at the box office. You see, if you go to the grocery store, they're selling Marvel Blu-rays for $30. Well, you can pay $6.99 a month to have Disney Plus. It kind of seems like a pretty solid way to start. And then, as I mentioned with Amazon, they also already have ESPN Plus out. So they're kind of the company that started that little plus sign at the end of everything that's going to be their streaming business. So ESPN Plus is out. It's been running since April 2018 for $4.99 a month. Pretty small price point for a lot of people. It's currently a standalone version of ESPN. You don't have to have any cable subscription whatsoever. They last reported that they had over 2 million paid users, which it's probably up a lot since then, since that came out. That number came out several months ago. And I'd say that's pretty impressive in just over a year or so, since ESPN Plus doesn't have any of their really massive properties at the moment. There's no Monday Night Football. There's no big time college football or basketball. There's no NBA basketball. But what it does have is the lower level college sports, Major League Baseball games, NHL games, and then it also has UFC. It spent billions on UFC rights, which, for those of you who don't know, fight sports are growing. People pay a lot of money for pay-per-views. So for ESPN to grab the rights to a lot of these UFC fights is going to be a big deal. A lot of people signed up for ESPN Plus just for these UFC fights. And then they also have the rights to soccer, which is things that you could call it a millennial focus sport, who are the people that are already cord cutting. So you can see how ESPN Plus might draw MLS fans. They also have some international soccer properties as well. And they have some exclusive shows that are available, as I said, only on ESPN Plus that have some big names attached to that, including Peyton Manning and Kobe Bryant. So they're putting some money in this, and Disney's spending a lot of money now and losing a lot of money on ESPN Plus at the moment, but they see this as the future and they're going to get ahead of this maybe more than some of their other competitors in that live sports, such as Fox or CBS. So it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward, but ESPN, for as much as it has been dogged for losing some subscribers over the last several years, which it has, it still charges more than any other network for cable packages, over $8 per month. So as I've said many times in this show, it's that live sports rights that seems to be the biggest draw to advertisers as more and more people go to these ad-supported platforms that we've now talked about for this whole episode, like Netflix and HBO. Users and consumers are becoming harder and harder to come by. So Disney Plus could easily then roll out a package where you could have Hulu and ESPN all in this same package, where Amazon can offer a similar kind of broad-based package where Netflix and HBO and some of these other providers might not be able to, Apple as well, especially in the early days. So they'll be able to get that monthly subscription revenue and advertising revenue, and also, as I've mentioned, offer a lot of people what they won't get anywhere else, which is live sports along with their different subscriber numbers. So that's the episode for today. We've talked a lot about the future of these companies, and I think this will be a really fun streaming race to watch. But we don't really know what's going to happen yet until these platforms actually come out. So we'll definitely be talking about them more in the lead up to the launch this fall. And then obviously after they come out, we'll have more episodes about what they actually look like and how they feel and what's that content. But that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines. And remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com. Also, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.